to the Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show, Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird in the entire WBOK listening audience. 8:35 a.m. in the morning. I want to thank everybody out there in WBOK land. All of our friends, if you're at 1230am.com, if you're on social media, man, Oliver Thomas on Facebook, wherever you are listening, tuning in. If you have the mobile app, which means you're always no excuse not to be in tune and in touch with what's happening here on WBOK. I want to thank all of our callers, all our listeners. I want to thank John Young, former parish president for Jefferson Parish, running for re-election and a candidate in this year's parish for parish president. Well, we're also going to hear from the other candidates who are running for parish president of ever-changing Jefferson Parish. So thank you, John, for participating. And we also, you know, at the end of every discussion, I always ask all of our candidates, you know, if they win or when they win, if they'll continue to come and share with our listening audience. And that's extremely important, especially if you're in an elected position. But in the studio with us right now is an incumbent, member of the Bessie Board District 2, and also candidate for re-election, Ms. Kira Orange-Jones. Welcome to the Good Morning Show.
Thanks, Oliver. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's glad you're here, and we'd like to have people right here on the Good Morning Show with OT and the Early Bird. First, who is Kira Orange-Jones? Why is she running for re-election, and why is education or the education system a part of what she's dedicated her life to?
Well, Oliver, I'll just start by, again, letting you know how excited I am to sit down and have the chance to talk to you today about education in the city and state and what we're what we're up against, both what we, I think, have working for us when we think about our children and their opportunities and also what challenges still remain. I am a lifelong educator. I started my career in education now 20 years ago as a fourth grade teacher at Eden Park Elementary in Baton Rouge. And you know, I think probably got that honestly because I come from a family of educators. My mother was my first teacher, but she was also a lifelong educator. And I think I've always had a heart for children. I think teaching and realizing what our students were not just capable of, which is basically everything, when given the opportunity to succeed and when we put those pieces in place for them, they will exceed expectations every time. But to be honest, I was also really challenged by some of the obstacles they had, in front of them in pursuit of the careers or the colleges of their choosing, because many aspects of the system were not working for them. Right. For example, I remember having a conversation with my principal in the middle of my first year, and at the request of a handful of parents from my fourth grade classroom, they asked me, "Can we go visit a high school that is going to ensure that our children are giving us a path to college? And can we go visit that school because we want to see what it would be like? We want to know what's ahead for our children, even though they're young. They're 9 and 10 years old." And I remember working with my principal and actually her coming back and telling me, "Look, it's going to be really hard to find a high school in this area within walking distance or maybe even a little further than that that will absolutely ensure that that children who go to that school will be on a path to college because our graduation rates are still so low across this community." And I couldn't believe that as a first year teacher that was true, that our students could be doing everything right in my fourth grade classroom yet still be cheated out of a fair opportunity later on in life. And so I spent the last 20 years working to address that challenge for students like my students across the state of Louisiana and ensure that we have, that they have meaningful choices to the life of their choosing. That is what, in my opinion, all of this is about. And that's a bit about why I got involved in the work.
Well, you know, the work is important. There are several issues. I think probably one of the most contested when you talk about public conversation, whether it's social media, talk shows, in the press, is this Bessie Board District 2 race. And I tell folk the council race and District 3 in Jefferson and the parish president's race in Jefferson Parish. But yours surely ranks up there. There are several questions from the community. One has been about your attendance. Now, we've seen some published reports. We've seen newspaper articles. We've seen a flurry back and forth. What is your attendance? And if your attendance isn't what the community thinks is up to par, why?
Well, let me start by saying, I know when this first came out, it came out in a blog. It did not come out on any published report, and there's been no substantiated media that's actually covered this. It's been a lot of blog and a lot of innuendo, and certainly I understand social media is a powerful platform now to get information out, but it's also a powerful platform to get misinformation out. So this is how it works. Some people don't know really how even Bessie meets or what we do, but we are a policymaking board, right? And I represent not just New Orleans, but I represent all of District 2, which is most of New Orleans. It's Jefferson Parish, the West Bank. It's all of the river parishes, St. John, St. James, St. Charles, and Assumption parishes, right? I represent that entire voting district on an 11-person board, 8 elected, 3 appointed by the governor, right? And we meet fairly monthly, right? And when we meet monthly, we meet the first day is a series of committee days, right? Depending on what kind of policies are getting passed. It might have something to do with finance. It might have something else to do with educator effectiveness or potentially even with school turnaround policies, maybe charters or other things we have going on. The second day is the formal Bessie meeting where all of the committee work that's happened over the course of the first day now happens in the second day where, you know, the board comes together and formally votes and maybe sometimes makes amendments, right? So I think what's getting conflated a bit intentionally, unfortunately, probably by some of my opponents is the distinction between formal board meetings and committee meetings. And the reason why that's important is because committee meetings are intentionally more fluid. They are. Sometimes you are in the meeting. You are actually in the you are in the room, but maybe not at the dais because you're handling an issue in the audience with a bunch of teachers or parents who have an issue. Sometimes you're even off to the side and you're talking to another Bessie member about a certain vote or what you all are trying to get done. Work is happening all day over the course of that day. And the second day is the Bessie board meeting, right? So my record, according to the board meetings, when these rumors started to come up, I called and I asked the executive director.
So what is your attendance record?
Over the last 4 years, 4 meetings, board meetings, I wasn't able to attend. 2 of those meetings were extenuating circumstances. One was my wedding and my honeymoon. I actually flew back between my wedding and my honeymoon because there were a set of things that had to happen at the committee meeting, but then I had to leave again for my honeymoon, so I wasn't there.
So those reports about 40-50% are wrong.
It's counting things that are not necessarily consistent board thing. I think. I don't know. I didn't do the math on this person's thing, but I imagine what's happening is they're counting things that actually don't count consistently towards board attendance, meaning sometimes you have to be at the administrative committee meeting, but if you're not on that committee, you don't necessarily have to be there. Sometimes you're there to get something done, and sometimes you actually are spending your time getting something
else done. So you're saying that's a misrepresentation of your service?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the record, the reality is I've been nominated now twice to be a board officer. I've been a secretary this past 4 years by my colleagues on my board. I think that speaks volumes to how my colleagues see my leadership. Not to mention, this is a volunteer role. Nobody runs for Bessie or stays in this seat unless you have a heart for children and a heart for service. This is unpaid. So there's no other reason to do this work if you're not going to truly do it. And that has been my commitment from day one and continues to be.
So you're saying that your service, your attendance is actually, better than what's being reported on social media.
Absolutely.
And in some campaign circles.
Absolutely. And I have to assume that people are kind of missing, I don't know intentionally or not, but whatever the case is, I think the rumor started because of the way people chose to count days and committees. But that's not actually the way Bessie, we track those things.
The next question that's concerning to a lot of folks, especially parents when you talk to them, the question that's been floating around on social media and the news, where do you live? Where do you live?
I live here in New Orleans. I've been a resident of New Orleans since right after Katrina. And before that, I lived in Baton Rouge. I've been in Louisiana my whole adult life, 20 years. I'm a proud resident. Again, I think this probably started from actually, I don't know why it started. I can't make assumptions about why people say what they say. I've been a resident here my whole life, and that's just the truth. You know, you know enough about politics to know that if I wasn't a resident, there'd be no way I'd be able to run for office. You cannot run for office unless you're duly qualified and trust that there would be all kinds of investigations.
You were challenged in the courts about your residency?
Nope. I was challenged in the courts about a different a different matter, but the reality is it also proved that I actually had that I actually had no problem.
So your domicile is Orleans Parish?
Oh, absolutely. Always. It has been since 2007 consistently, and before that I was a Baton Rouge.
We're having our conversation with Kira Orange-Jones. She is the Bessie Board member for District 2. She's also a candidate for re-election. Before we move on to the next topic, though, but you have to agree that especially in a position representing our kids, given what's happening with education, public education today, that they deserve our best.
They deserve our absolute best, Oliver, which is why I have been committed every day of my past 4 years to represent this district strongly on this board. It's why I continue to run, because while we have made a lot of progress, and I know we're going to get a chance to talk about some of the things that our educators and families and students have been doing over the past 8 years, there is still work left to be done, which is why I'm committed to reelection and committing to continue to work towards this.
The allegation that you're a rubber stamp for John White, a rubber stamp for education officials or people who are trying to raid or take over our public education is another thing, whether it's social media, whether it's campaign accounts. You and your vote, how do you think about what do you determine when you vote on issues or the positions that you take?
I mean, listen, I have always been an independent voice and an independent person. Okay. Even my family will say, if Kira has something she wants to get done and she has in her mind, she will pursue and get it done, because that's always been who I am. And so I think that, that my track record shows that on the board. I think about after my first election and the fact that there were so many people across the community who had felt like we hadn't engaged them meaningfully in education. That was such a vitriolic race, if you'll recall. This was now 8 years ago when I was running as the first time.
Right.
And I met with every single person who wanted to meet with me. I met with people who voted for me. Of course, I met with people who didn't vote for me. I took their considerations seriously. It was the reason why I ended up standing by communities like, Landry, for example, early on in my tenure, against the department, honestly, when we were thinking about ways to merge those two communities. And there have been many other times where I've actually...
The parents of and many of parents of Smothers Academy with that debacle, they called in to the show and called in the station to say that your work with them, many of the advocates and parents there, to talk about that issue.
Absolutely. Well, this was a challenging situation, and it was actually very heartbreaking, because this was a school that very late in the summer, it turns out that there was a significant amount of malfeasance involved, particularly with the administration. And as a result, they found themselves in an untenable situation to get their charter revoked. But what that meant was we had a community of families that were now in the middle of the summer not able to actually start school at the same school that they were at the following year. And I felt very strongly that we needed to do better to ensure that our families understood the next steps, that they actually were being heard, that they actually had options, especially given how late in the year it was. And so, I'm sure you probably heard from the parents how engaged I've been on this, because I felt like it was such an important issue to ensure that our families knew where to go next. Because this could be a very confusing system for families. So because they weren't going to the same school, I want to make sure they actually knew where to go.
So let's talk about a confusing system. That's a great segue. The residents of Louisiana in general, New Orleans in particular, are confused. We don't know who to believe in when you talk about the trends in public education, higher graduations, more folk graduating from schools, success and progress, and then independent organizations will basically say, now Louisiana still ranks in the in the bottom rung when you talk about public education. So what is public education today? What is progress in terms of public education?
I think that's that is the question that I think about the most. I think most of the indicators that matter in terms of most of the indicators that are measurable, let's start there. There are other indicators that matter, but unfortunately we can't always track all of them. But the ones that matter demonstrate that students in this state and students in this city are growing at rates faster than other students of their same background across the state. So, for example, African-American students in this community over the past several years have increased their graduation rate more than the national average. Mm-hmm. They have actually outpaced the national average. But if you step back and you look at all black students across Louisiana, it isn't necessarily the case that that's happening for all black students across Louisiana. So students in this community, based on the education that they are receiving on whole, are growing at a faster rate than other students, right? It's also true that if you look at third grade reading rates or eighth grade, math and reading rates. These are very important indicators that tell you the likelihood of a child going successfully through high school and on to college, the degree to which our children can read. Mm-hmm. Literacy, you imagine, is a really powerful indicator of future success. And if you look at those rates, the reality is they have year over year continued to improve for students across our community. I think the reason why it's still a question is because while we have made progress, right, and it's been, you know, validated by national studies that like the Credo Institute out of Stanford University that has no real dog in the fight about the impact of this particular educational model across our community. Or you can look at our own backyard, Tulane University, mm-hmm. and the study that came out by the Cowan Institute that speaks specifically about the growth of this district in comparison to other districts of its size across the country, saying no district mm-hmm. of its size has had the same impact. The reality is, nobody is cheering from the bleachers yet, because there's still so much work left to be done. As you just mm-hmm. named, we are still 49th in education. Mm-hmm. And why are we 49th in education? Because for such a long time, our standards, the actual standard that we were holding children to, the level of work, how hard is the work that our children are doing, was actually a lot less rigorous than it was in other places. So there was so much work we had to do at the state level to actually raise the standard to say, well, we were learning here, what kids are learning here could compete with anywhere else in the country, whether it be Massachusetts or California, and even increasingly so because of the way our economy is changing globally, right? How are children competing globally? We actually now have a set of really, really rigorous standards that ensure that when children come to school, the quality of the material that they are learning will put them on a path to compete with any other child in this state or any other child in this world for that matter. And that's really important. But I need to say one more thing. Well, when we do that, mm-hmm. what it means is the overall rate of progress looks a lot slower. Because, the easiest way to make progress look better, you know what it is? Lower the standard.
We're talking to Kira Orange Jones. She's the incumbent member of the Bessie Board District 2, and she's a candidate for re-election. Many folk in the community are questioning whether we have a school system or a system of schools. Mm-hmm. What do we have and how do we operate? And what is the best system for our kids and our families moving forward?
Okay. So we did for some time, I think, have a system of schools in the years following mm-hmm. Katrina, and before we did the hard work of unifying the schools and actually giving them back to Orleans Parish. And I think the reason we had that, I know the reason we had that, was because so many of our schools were still under state control because of the academic status that they actually had at the time. And so we did have a system of schools, right? We had several mm-hmm. schools who were still seen as under the recovery school district, and that existed for several years. But one of the things that I feel most proud of, the work that I've had the chance to lead alongside others in this community, has been the return of schools back to Orleans Parish schools, right? And what that means is Bessie is no longer running schools. We are not directly running, any school in this community. That's another misperception that has come up in this race. What we actually do now is oversee policy, but Orleans Parish runs those schools. And so, yes, they are a school system that actually is running schools. Now, they are running schools that are primarily charter schools, which means those schools still have local boards and local governance responsibilities. But there's a set of responsibilities that still exist at the board level, and those are still Orleans Parish schools.
So then let's talk about accountability and governance. With Kennedy School, some of the challenges at Einstein, Smothers Academy, every day we read the paper, busing. Yes. We're hearing about a whole nother level of controversy and challenges. What should accountability look like, especially on behalf of the parents and the kids
right.
who attend these schools? And then in addressing that, is it the best practice to wait till a school is failing to shut it down
right.
or to have an intervention team to lift that school up so it doesn't fail?
Well, of course. I mean, that we do a lot
and
of
things. Yeah. And if that's the best, yeah. Why doesn't it happen?
It does happen, right? You can think of multiple examples of schools across our community mm-hmm. that actually did have an intervention team, and that intervention team was incredibly important in ensuring that you...
What are some examples?
I think about Wilson, the last, 8 years, and the work that happened there to make sure that mm-hmm. A school that was moving, unfortunately, not at the rate of growth that our mm-hmm. children deserve, was able to work with their local community and their local board to put mm-hmm. in place another operator to ensure that that results happened, and it was a real community effort to do it, and I think that's a real model for our community, because the reality is mm-hmm. sometimes you do need to make a change of leadership, and that's not just true in our industry, but it's also true in business and any other industry where we are holding ourselves accountable for meaningful outcomes. You asked the question about what are we holding ourselves accountable to. One accountability metric that matters a lot is academic results, the degree mm-hmm. to which our schools are truly educating our children. And when that can't happen, there's responsibility on the part of the school, sometimes the state, sometimes mm-hmm. The board or the local board, to make sure that there is an intervention.
You have to
place.
Agree, though, that in many cases when the intervention yeah. comes, it's too late. It's after the fact. Someone from the system, whether it's BSEE or local school systems, should have intervened long before you got to the point where you were going to revoke a charter or shut them down.
Well, I think the reason why we ended up revoking a charter, for example, in the case of Smothers, despite it being a difficult decision, is an early intervention, because the alternative is waiting for a renewal. So that's actually mm-hmm. too late. You lose another couple years of your children's lives. So I actually don't think that this is something that is a slow response. I think sometimes it takes time. What we hear from our educators is it takes time to turn the ship around. So you can't go in there in a year and say, okay, well, you haven't gotten mm-hmm. the jobs in a year. We're going to actually do X, Y, Z, revoke your – because actually sometimes educators do need enough time. I think 3 or 4 years, which is how we review schools currently academically, is actually the right kind of standard to be able to say, okay, in this period of time, how many results have you seen? I mean, something else that you asked about that I think is really important to point to, which is these examples. You mentioned, JFK or other mm-hmm. examples that are really just upsetting, not acceptable, and most important, just totally outrageous when you think about what our children and our families deserve and expect from an educational system. Unfortunately, those examples are true in urban districts, rural districts, charter, non-charter, Louisiana, any other state in the country. I can name, unfortunately, 15, 20 examples off the top of my head of similar examples across the country. And the reason I'm naming that is not because it's not outrageous. It is outrageous, which is why I've called for, alongside mm-hmm. the superintendent, to make sure that Orleans is able to manage mm-hmm. that investigation carefully and make sure that everybody who's responsible is held accountable. But I'm naming it because sometimes that gets associated with charter. And that actually has very little to do with charter. That has to do with bad actors in a system. And the reality is, unfortunately, there are always bad actors in the system. What I think we need to improve on, and this is the big lesson from, I think, that example to your point, is I think we can have an earlier warning system that says, okay, wait a second. Why are these students doing so well mm-hmm. over the course of the year when historically maybe the previous year they didn't do as well? Is something going on that shouldn't be going on? And that would actually enable us to get a better sense of illuminating the problem before it becomes a real problem in the lives of children.
We've got a couple of minutes left, but before you go, what have you learned about public service in the position that you're in?
Yeah.
And mixed in that, what is public education going to look like 5, 10, or 15 years from now?
So I've learned a lot. I mean, this is a big district, right? This covers, as I said, over 100 miles from New Orleans all the way almost to, the tip of mm-hmm. Assumption Parish. So I think what I've learned about this particular public service role is you really need to be able to recognize that the solutions and what our community in New Orleans needs for its schools is actually very different than what St. John is asking for or what Assumption is asking for. And to be responsive to your community means that you are able to differentiate. In this debate, a lot of the local debate has been about charter versus non-charter. But truthfully, Oliver, like, that's not even an issue for every other part of our district where they don't even have charters, nor do they mm-hmm. are they asking for it, right? So we need to make sure we're having the right conversation for each community in our district.
And what is that?
I think ultimately, what is it going to take to ensure that every child has the opportunity to live a life of their choosing? That is the question. We need to stop talking about charters or not. We need to talk about it. Does every child, are we preparing every child to actually live a life of their choosing? That is the job of our education.
Lastly, before you go, it's been said that you're a rubber stamp for John White, and you're a rubber stamp for those who are trying to take over the education system. What do you say to that?
I would say, while it has been said, it hasn't been said by and large by hundreds of thousands of members of this district, voters in this district, who have trusted me to educate their children for the last 8 years. I won my first election, as you know, mm-hmm. With over 70% of the mm-hmm. vote in the runoff, and the second year with over 70% again 4 years ago. And that tells me that our voters have trusted me with being able to play an important role alongside others in ensuring that we deliver on the promises to our children. And so I'll continue to be an independent voice on BSE. I'll continue to ensure that we are making good decisions on behalf of children in partnership with this community. And if given the opportunity to serve again, I look forward to partnering with you and with many mm-hmm. others across this community to continue to make sure that.
And what do you say to our listening audience in your closing, and why should people vote for you, and how do they reach out to you, and will you come back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, my name is Kira Orange Jones, and I'm thrilled to be proud to offer myself again as not only the incumbent in this race, but a candidate for reelection. I'm looking forward to partnering and working with you over the next 4 years in this community to make sure we serve all children. And it's been a real honor to sit down and have time to spend with you, Oliver, on such important issues for this community. I'm number 38 on the ballot.
Wow, this has been our Meet the Candidate series with and you promised to come back.
Yes, I'll be back. You promised to invite me.
We'll definitely invite you.
Thank you.
You got open door policy. This is OT in the Early Bird with Kira Orange Jones, incumbent, but also a candidate for reelection for BSE Board District 2. When we come back, we're talking about, man, international arts and festival, man, couple of gurus of our culture, Mr. Ernest Kelly, the president and CEO of the International Arts Foundation, and Dr. Clyde. You know, when you got one name, you good, man. Just call him Dr. Clyde. He's the director of the Center for African and African American Studies at Southern University, the International Arts Festival and Culture Weekend, October 4th and 5th. We're going to talk to them about that great event after the break.